Live on DAZN Worldwide, May 2nd and 3rd, Garcia versus Romero and Canelo versus Skull. Friday from 6 p.m. Eastern, Garcia returns in a history-making Times Square takeover. 24 hours later, Saturday from 7 p.m. Eastern, King Canelo faces undefeated Skull for the undisputed crown. May 2nd and 3rd, a knockout weekend of boxing. Pick one or go all in for only $90, exclusively on DAZN. Buy now at DAZN.com/boxing.
When you golf in Missouri, the courses are so close, you'll spend more time on the fairway than the freeway. Reserve a tee time at the Regal Osage National, designed by the king himself, Arnold Palmer. Take a cart ride on the wild side in the breathtaking surrounds of Payne's Valley, designed by Tiger Woods. And after the back nine, there's still world-class dining and distilleries, shops and spas, museums and more. Find your new golf MO in Missouri. Start planning your golf getaway at visitmo.com.
Welcome back to another episode of Friends from Work. This is a podcast about all things in the Marvel Cinematic Universe, and it's hosted by me, Kyle Sconewill, and my longtime friend, Robbie Earle. I am absolutely exhausted today. So I'm hoping that today's episode can be the pick-me-up I needed, because I think you're also tired too. I stayed up too late, three nights in a row, feel like I'm in my 20s, and my body is not in its 20s anymore. And so, holy cow, I'm tired. Hi.
Hi. Man. Yeah. Yeah. I feel that way. It's weird. I'm 24. You know that feeling where it's like you have a thing the next day that is significant, but you're past the point of needing to do any preparation for it. So it's not like you're stressed, like having to get something in time or whatever. It's just like, it's a thing that's happening. And so you just kind of, like the day before graduation or something, I don't know.
We told people this over on Friends from Work, but in all seriousness, legitimately, I'll be thinking and praying for you tomorrow. Robbie goes into surgery tomorrow, right? Or actually, for our listeners, today, that they're listening to this right now.
True. Yeah. Yeah. If you're listening in the morning, I'm probably under anesthesia, so I won't know.
Gosh. But I hope it goes so well. I hope it goes well. And I hope that a week from now, when we're talking again, you feel a legit sense of relief. That's my hope for you. That actually you feel physically better, or at least you see the beginning of what's going to happen.
No, I think... I believe that that will be the case. So do I. But the beauty of it is that if something goes wrong with this version of me, there are countless variants out there that can just take over.
Okay, so I was editing one of our episodes the other day, and it finally hit me. You are, like you are in all things of life, obsessed with getting the perfect transition. And I love that about you. Like, I think it was the other things that we're into episode that I'm editing. And like, you were trying so hard, like, how can I transition from steak into surgery? And it's like, I can't figure something out. It's like, I broke the computer, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. I don't think, did I come up with anything? I don't think that I did.
I think you just said, wow, mine is incredibly different from that. That was it.
I have told several people about your steak story, because I find that I love it.
So if you don't know what we're talking about, go subscribe to Friends from Work Plus. But one detail I forgot to tell people that my wife was so mad I didn't bring up is that this is how naive I am about steak, Robbie. Up until about 10 years ago, and this is not a joke, I thought it was called flaming yawn. Like flaming, Y-O-N, yawn. And then like 10 years ago, I realized it's filet mignon. And so
that adds to it. This is a conversation that we can't explain now, but we've explained it on Friends More Plus. And speaking of transitions, That is something I wanted to talk about briefly before we dive in today, because, you know, with phase five starting and with all of the conversations about whether Quantumania is a train wreck or not, and stuff that we've already gotten into on other episodes, for all of that, there's just, it feels like a lot of interest in the Kang character and where things are heading with a lot of different properties. Like, you know, it's like, I feel like even the, and we've mentioned this a few times, I feel like the more that we find out about the Thunderbolts project, I feel like people are getting excited about that side of things. And so if you are one of those people and you have just recently found the podcast, maybe you've heard us mention Friends from Work Plus, but you don't actually know what that is. That is where we get to do deeper dives into a lot of things, a lot on the comics front. And like we've talked about, we're about to start this, we also are starting this Jonathan Hickman read through, that is even more relevant after Quantumania.
Mm-hmm.
But we also have a lot of other stuff going. We've been doing these creator interviews that you get little clips of here on the main feed, but we do the full kind of unedited version over on the Patreon.
Mm-hmm.
And there's also a bunch of other stuff that goes on. Kyle does these movie club episodes, and we're tweaking the way some of that stuff works in ways that I think we're excited about. But mm-hmm. we do typically with that try to get into projects from creators we're going to see on MCU films or shows coming up. And so we get to do for again, this was timely, for Wakanda Forever. Kyle did an episode on the movie Creed, which was also directed by Ryan Coogler, by the way.
I just watched Creed 2, by the way. And
oh,
now Creed,
so I have not seen Creed 2. How was Creed, it?
It's very good still.
Man.
Don't get me started.
Well, because Creed 2 is not directed by Coogler, so I've kind of been curious. But still Goranson's score, which is important.
And now Creed 3 is getting rave reviews. The
month/year of Jonathan Majors. Yeah, yeah. Well, and Michael B. Jordan is, that's his directorial debut, which is a pretty, you know, a decent, you know, big budget for someone that's never directed a movie before. So anyway, that's all stuff that we get to get into on Friends from Work Plus, in addition to some really fun perks. You get a discount on any Friends from Work Plus merch, which we typically have a couple different things like that come out a year that are really fun and go fairly quickly. And then also something that I think people have wound up really liking, maybe I think something that's become a lot of people's favorite part of Friends from Work Plus, you get a really nice printed copy of our season artwork of that year. And so for folks that signed up at the very beginning of Friends from Work Plus, they now have artwork for all of the seasons that we've had. And so I think currently that's what they have, three pieces. And then, you know, if you sign up now, you will start with getting the new kind of Quantumania, Marvel's Guardians themed season 4 art that we have. And we do, we have been brainstorming some other stuff on that front. And so anyway,
wow. Just, what a pitch.
I feel like every now and then
I feel like I should
we take it for granted that people know what we're referring to when we talk about Friends from Earth Plus. So given that we're kind of starting a new phase in both the MCU and the Friends from Work podcast, there is my Friends from Work Plus infomercial.
All right, so today is going to be almost entirely freestyled, which is actually something I'm looking forward to. Maybe stresses you out a little bit, but I've been looking forward to this for a while. And okay, so now it's time to snap out of it, right? We're tired. It's time to wake up. Wake up. Here we go. In the words of Peter Quill, showtime, a-holes. Okay. okay, here's what we're going to do. I need to catch people up on all kinds of trivia. I don't know that I'm going to give away all the shirts for these, but I'm going to do something fun today. This is going to be an entire day of me just catching you off guard. Ready? I'm going to hit you with all these trivias, and I want you to try to answer them. And if you can, great. If you can't, I can still give a shirt out to the person who can get it right. Okay? These are hard, but I'm going to put you on the spot. And I'm going to put you on the spot. I'm going to put you on the spot so much coming up too. So
that
just
sounds
know,
terrible.
No,
why?
It's I'm so excited about it. Just but, know this is a really, really, really safe space, Robbie. Okay. And everything I ask here, like we can just have an open discussion about it.
Wow.
All right. So this is going to be a totally different thing for you.
When my cross country coach used to be like, okay, we're doing speed drills today and I'm really excited about it for you. And it's like, are you also doing the speed drills? No, but I think you're going to get a lot out of it.
Then I need to tease this for a second. I talked to my hero, Christoph Beck,
yes,
for 17 minutes and it was glorious. And so parts of that will be in next week, Thursday's episode, which is where we're going to officially rank Quantumania and play not only clips of Christoph Beck, but also clips from some of the comic writers of Kang. And so you'll get a whole smorgasbord next week, which is like our final bow on Quantumania, an epic discussion that's basically lasted over a month now. But today we're not talking anything critical. We're literally just talking Kang. So first trivia, then all just timeline junk, Kang junk. Again, safe space. We're going to get into the weeds on this stuff. And I actually think this is stuff that a lot of people are asking. And the discussion, even if we don't have an answer, I think will be helpful. Okay? So first, though, we're going to do trivia, and I want you to try to answer it if you know it. So I need you to get your mind right, too. Like, I know you got a lot going on. You're going into surgery tomorrow, but it's time to lock in. Mind right. Here we go. Trivia. We're going to go all the way back to Falcon and the Winter Soldier.
If I answer these, how will people also answer them?
If you get them right, that rules out a shirt for answering that question. If you get it wrong.
So I'm robbing others of the opportunity to get a Friends from Work Plus.
Correct. Shirt. Correct. But I've already given out like 30 something shirts. Okay. So I'm already Santa Claus here.
Well, luckily.
At some point, I need to wrap it up anyways. I can't give them out for eternity.
Luckily, I I'm not sure how my
so loose.
I think I'm gonna lose enough to where people are gonna be fine.
Here we go, from Falcon and the Winter Soldier. These are hard, Robbie, but I need you paying attention. Here we go. What is the name of the senator that we saw Bucky cross off his list early on in that show? Now, remember, he sabotages her car.
Oh yeah.
Do you know her name?
I just no idea. I have no idea.
Okay, this one, I think, if I remember right, I actually already got an answer for, because this is from a previous one. So the update there was Senator Atwood.
Okay. Yeah, that sounds vaguely familiar in a way where I know that you're not lying to me, but not in a way that I would ever have been able to get.
What if I was just making all these up every time? Okay, and then we already got an answer for this one, too. Can you tell me, from Spider-Man Far From Home, the order of the cities that Peter travels to specifically. Can you give this a shot?
I can tell you this one.
Okay.
Wait, we did these.
I know. Right? I have an answer already. I've given a shirt out for this, but I haven't announced the answer, so I'm giving you a shot to say the answer first.
Gotcha. Okay. So the order of cities, it starts with Venice.
Correct.
Then Prague.
Correct.
Then Berlin.
Correct.
Then it's the place in the Netherlands that I just have no hope of being able to pronounce.
I'm Dutch and I can't say this, which is like Broekeplanderdijk.
Oh yeah, there it is. Like Broekeplanderdijk.
My music.
And then London.
Correct, dude. Let's go.
See, there you go. We got a little bit.
All right. So now these are the new ones, but I'll give you a chance to guess it. Okay?
Okay.
From Shang-Chi. I love this so much, by the way. I should host an entire trivia night for Friends from Work Plus. Wouldn't that be fun?
Yeah. Wait, are you using the prior order as you're going through, or are you using the new Phase 4 order?
Full confession, I'm using the new Phase 4 order, except I realized I had messed it up because I had the old one on my phone. And so I did watch Shang-Chi in this order. And then I looked at my the playlist on Spotify and went, oh no. So I'm back on the new one other than Shang-Chi. So fair. I'm sorry about that.
Very fair. Okay.
But from Shang-Chi, because I watched it. And we're going to do a whole rewatch, by the way, coming up soon.
Right. Well, and this is hard. The reason I thought that is these others, I've watched recently, and I haven't seen Shang-Chi in forever, so this is extra spicy.
Well, then maybe someone else can get this shirt, okay? What brand of car does Razor Fist drive? So, as a hint, when they're like scrambling to get out of the compound, they're like, look at all these cars, and they take Razor Fist's car to ultimately do the run through all the trees.
Yeah.
Do you know what kind of car it is?
I can picture it.
I'll give you a guess if you want. If you're wrong, I'll give someone else a guess. They steal this car to get to Tao Lo.
I don't know.
Okay. So that's fair game. Next, from Eternals. Where is Ajax's house located? This is not as hard. Twice they say where her house physically is.
Is it
where Icarus finds her and has the conversation on the porch?
Yeah, is it South Dakota?
It is!
Wow.
Oh my goodness. Oh, I should do this too. Incredible, Robbie. Wow.
Hey,
okay.
Thanks.
So that rules out for someone else. Werewolf by night.
Okay.
Tell me how each of the hunters dies in the entire story.
Oh,
so give me the end of each one, real quick.
This is hard.
Don't even have to say the names. Just it's like the big guy.
I know, because there's like the Scottish guy, right?
Yeah, the big Scottish guy.
He gets killed by Ted.
Correct.
Then there's the guy with the face tattoo. No, not the face tattoos, because that's Jack. But there's a guy that's got a sword, right? And he's killed by Elsa. Because then there's that whole scene where she has her hand over his mouth.
That's the guy with the arrow on his arm, like the arrow shooter. She cuts off his arm and then she kills him.
That's who I'm thinking of. But I got the weapon wrong, so I don't know if that counts.
Okay. I'll give you two for two. I love that people at home are doing this too.
Oh gosh, I can't remember.
All right, we're going to pause there. I keep it moving. So if you don't know the rest, I'll let someone else guess.
I want to say the rest are killed by Jack, but I feel like one other one is killed by Elsa, but I can't remember. I think maybe the other woman hunter is killed by Elsa and the rest are killed by Jack. Is that right?
I'll pause. I'll let someone else answer from that point on.
Fair. Okay.
Last question, and then we talk about Kang. From Moon Knight. And now I've only watched episode one, so this is from episode one, okay? Steven is perusing his apartment and he finds another cell phone that Mark had been using, right? And he opens it up and he has all these missed calls from Layla.
Right.
There's one other name on there that he's missed a call from. One other name. It's like 30 missed calls from Layla and one other guy.
Is it
do you know that last name?
Is it Frenchie?
Nope. All right, we'll stay there then.
Okay.
See if someone else can get it. Nice. That's it. That's as far as I am.
Wow. You know what? I'll take that.
That was fun. Nice work. I'm impressed.
Wow.
Okay.
That was intense. I know how people feel every week now.
Yeah. Plus that music for 7 minutes makes it more stressful.
Yeah.
Okay. So I'm slightly joking when I say this is a safe space, but I'm also not in that everything I'm about to ask, there's no embarrassing questions. So if you just want to start a conversation about something that other people find obvious, that's okay. And same with people that brought this up on Slack, different things. These are just a total random assortment of things that either I've been thinking about that I need clarity on, or that I feel like I thought long enough to get clarity on, or that I'd love just a little bit of comics insight into maybe what they're hinting at with something, kind of like what you do with Candace. So that's kind of what I want to get into here.
Okay.
Okay, here's where I want to start, Robbie. Let's go back to what He Who Remains says in Loki. And first off, you tell me if I'm understanding the overall premise correctly, okay?
Okay.
So that whole scene with He Who Remains is taking place outside of time. So we need to remove when that happened from the equation, correct? It happened at some point, but it's not in what we know as time.
You're talking about the actual scene with He Who Remains.
Yes, the actual Citadel.
Yes.
So there's no point in saying that's like year 5,000 or that's right. Like AD 100.
I've thought about this a lot because even before Quantumania, because yeah, technically, if you want to follow the rules that Loki set out, all the events of Loki take, from their perspective at least, take place outside of time. So the multiverse opening up like it does at the end of Loki is not something that happens post-Endgame necessarily. You know, like and that's where it gets really confusing. Like in our watch order, we've pretended that it does, in part because the MCU sort of treats it like it does. Like you get that line from Doctor Strange that's like, this shouldn't even be possible. And then obviously after the Loki, like we don't get any multiversal phenomena before Endgame, right? And then now we're getting multiversal things happening after Loki in the, you know, multiverse saga. But I would love to talk to someone at Marvel and figure out exactly how this works, because it is Loki's future, right? Like to Loki, he has his own internal timeline, right? Like,
see,
even
that's
though,
where our brains like can't even comprehend what that's like, because we do, like Kang says, like once you get outside of the cage of time, like we're in that cage, so it doesn't even make sense technically. You're saying like Loki, even though he's doing something that's outside of time, he has a future. It's like his time is still going, right? Like he would eventually die.
Right. Yeah.
Or is he eternal while he's in there?
See, that's also a good question, because
like, do those TVA agents age out and die?
I feel like they don't, but I guess like, I mean, I want to say, having watched Loki fairly recently, I feel like there are some lines that make it seem like they've been going for a long time. I feel like individual agents. And I also think the fact that Renslayer is the one that abducted Sylvie in the first place, and This is an extrapolation, but if we want to make the MCU internally consistent, we know Thor in Infinity War tells Rocket that he's like 1500 years old or something. And we know that. So my point being, at the phase we see him as sort of like a grown adult as Guardian, like at that stage, he's like, you know, over 1,000 years old. So I feel like it stands to reason that Loki is around the same age, and that like Sylvie,
well, he's not,
I think,
technically as Guardian, technically. So maybe he doesn't age as long. But yes.
But we did see like Loki and Thor as kids together in the first Thor at around the same age, you know,
and
then we
look
see
about
them.
The same. Okay.
I know this is a lot of assumption, but I also think that like, if we're going to assume Sylvie is around the same age as Loki, which, you know, could be, or, you know, give or take a few hundred years, I guess. But I my point being, I think that Renslayer, if she was around for Sylvie's childhood and is still around now, then yeah, I think she's probably been around for much longer than at least like the average human lifespan. And we know that she is human because of the Loki finale reveal. So I think maybe you're right that within the TBA, you are somehow outside of time.
I realize this is my last disclaimer that this is obviously so in the weeds. Like, we are going to alienate some people, but that's the hope is that we get somewhere by just discussing this, everybody. So
I think that these are, again, these are things I've thought about before, because I do, like, there's got to be, and I'd be curious to hear people weigh in on this. Like, well, yeah, because like we're saying, the reason why I think about this a lot is there are theories that the multiversal war that we find out about in Loki episode one is the same thing that Kang is referring to as coming.
And that's what I'm going to get to.
And so it's, but then again, it's, you know, I think what makes me excited about this whole next saga is that, like, is Kang referring to, like, when he's talking about how it all ends,
that's is he referring to
something that is he referring to that, like a thing that the Kangs cause, or is it some other thing that the Kangs are trying to prevent?
Okay, so I want to get into that in a little bit more, because that is also something that Colin and Jackson referenced a lot in their comic book, which is that no matter how hard Kang tries, it ultimately ends up being him that's causing a lot of this stuff, which is very similar to the thing that Lost did in 2006 or whatever, which is there was an episode called Whatever Happened, Happened. And in season 5, remember that? The whole debate was the incident something that happened and they have to now prevent it, or is in them trying to prevent it, that is the incident that they actually caused it. And so this is not a new concept, but first of all, I love these kind of concepts. This is very Christopher Nolan, right? Very Christopher Nolan.
For sure. Yeah.
But which, by the way, he could kill like a Kang Dynasty movie. I feel like it would be totally outside of his genre, but it'd be really cool. Let's go back to He Who Remains. So let's just say he is outside of time and the TVA is outside of time. So remove that variable for a second, because when he tells the story, this is what he's saying, right? Time as we know it, like right now on this planet, that there is a multiverse. So right now at this moment, there are, let's go back to the comic universe, but even though we now know Tony and Cap, let's say, at this exact second, there are like millions of other Tonys and Caps doing their own thing in different multiverses. Because again, He Who Remains is outside of time. So just ignore that for a second. So in that, there's a Kang in each one. Right? And that sometime in each timeline, which probably happens in the future, like the comic books say, like 3,500, like another 1,000 years from now, Kang is born. He's a baby. He's a human. But when he grows up, he's such a smart scientist that he figures out, oh my goodness, there is a multiverse and I can actually talk to them through some device or something.
Right.
Right. So he now figures out I can talk to these other multiverses that include other Kangs, because in the other multiverses, other Kangs are also at a similar pace figuring out that they can now talk to the multiverse. So that's what he's explaining. And then they meet these Kangs. And at first they're like, hi, nice to meet you. Nice tie. I like your face. I like your nose, whatever. And then eventually though, it turns hostile instead of it being like helpful. One Kang is like, I want to defeat the other Kang. And in that, it leads out to entire wars somehow in the future between these multiverses. So different versions of Kang. That then goes so poorly that is that the event he's referring to as the end of time? So when Kang now talks to 616 Scott and says, I've seen the end and you don't want to know what it is. That's the event he's talking about? That He Who Remains then has to wrangle Eliath to consume all the other timelines and only one is left at the end of all of this. That's what we're saying? That's what he's saying you're afraid of?
I don't know. I don't know. I think that that's
Do you follow everything I just said, though?
Oh, I did. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I think that that's the big question. And I think that it's supposed to, I think it's something we're supposed to be wondering because, yeah, I mean, He Who Remains lays it out pretty clearly. I think
And because he's outside of time, you can't think of it as once he gets stabbed, now the multiverse, like in a linear fashion, is open. It's more that like you have all these things happening over here, and here's right. here remains over here. And if he ever gets stabbed, it just goes back to this one, no matter when it was.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah. I mean, I think what's interesting is well, okay, you know what? You know what I think is going to be illuminating on this is Loki season 2 for obvious reasons because Jonathan Majors is you know set to appear the rumors are at least in several episodes. I think we can assume at least one given the post-credit scene. But the other thing about the post-credit scene is Victor Timely is this variant of Kang that goes and kind of essentially hides out in the past and bides his time to then kind of gain power when there's sort of essentially in a time where there's less competition as an oversimplification. And so even without knowing that, it's very clear from that scene that we're going back to like the late 1800s or early 1900s. And so that is informative on this point, I think, just by itself, because now we know that Kang is loose in the past. So that would show that like that scene that we see at the end of Quantumania is happening prior to almost anything else we've ever seen in the MCU, at least, you know, post like the Thor prologues, you know? So I think like that starts to open up, like that would show, yes, he was outside of time and the implications of that are being felt everywhere across the timelines. I think what's still confusing about that though is why, like, are they going to do something to show that this has been happening, like, all along? Or you know what I mean? Like, because He Who Remains. Linear. Yeah, yeah. It's he cuts out every other timeline but one. So as long as he was doing what he was doing, what we saw was, like, this was the timeline that he said could stick around. And I don't.
And why? Do we ever get an explanation why that's the one?
Because
he's from that one?
I bet it's the one he's from. Like, and okay, I would okay, like
okay,
that.
Okay, okay, like okay. That. So the quantum realm is also outside of time, right?
Right.
So are we saying that technically the 616 version of Kang is He Who Remains? And the Kang that we just saw as a conqueror against Scott is not 616 Kang. Like, that Kang hasn't been to the same Earth that Scott is from.
See, I don't... So here's the...
right?
Here's the interesting
thing.
Because
that's what thing. You're saying.
Yeah, yeah. Well, or you know, positing. I think... And I'm curious to get your thoughts on this. What is interesting to me about the way Kang has been presented in the MCU is that there is certainly precedent, you know, like, and I don't want to go super comics heavy today because I would rather focus on what we've been given within the MCU, but there's certainly precedent for the Council of Kangs, you know, like that's where that first mid-credit scene comes from, like all of these different Kangs together. And even the stuff that we write for the Comics Corner shows there, you know, there are times where one version of Kang will be at war with another version of Kang. However, I think historically in the comics or early, I don't know, like oftentimes a lot of the King stuff I've read is not so much like there are a million different versions, like countless different versions of King that are all at war with each other. And I feel like it's much more Kang is just a person that has gone, like, he's outside of his one timeline, like in his one, like in the 616 universe, Kang is all over the place. And so a current version of Kang might meet his future self, but it's still within the 616 universe, like on the comic side of this. And I don't know if that makes sense, but like, I don't associate Kang with variants quite as much as the MCU is. I'm not saying that there's certainly like the Kurt Busiek stuff, like there's certainly precedent for it, like I said. But that is more of a, to me, Jonathan Hickman, like the way that he presents the Council of Reeds there, which you could argue is sort of inspired by the Council of Kings, but also like the whole way that the lead up to Secret Wars happens, where you start to see all these different versions of Earth and, you know, countless different realities all colliding. And that's what Kang is sort of pointing to in Quantumania. Like, I've seen the end, countless incursions. And it seems like he's saying in the MCU, those are all caused by Kang. And I guess that would comport with what He Who Remains says. But I guess the reason why I'm just a little, and I like it, a little in the dark, is because they are, I think, treating Kang, like in the MCU, it seems like Kang's defined by having just countless variants of himself out there that are all kind of equally dangerous and in their own ways. And that's not how I've always thought about Kang in the comics. And so all of that is to answer your question to say, if I were looking at this from a comics perspective, I would say it could be both. Like, both Kang the Conqueror and He Who Remains could both be 616 Kang. And one is him, like, in his youth, and one is him after he's kind of realized that to end everything, he had to find Goliath and stop it. And that would even fit with him saying, I've been called many things, the Conqueror. Like, because in the comics, the version of Kang that, like, He Who Remains is a character in the comics, but I think everybody would say, including, I think Lansing and Kelly, the Kang writers that we had on, said this, He Who Remains is based on the character Immortus in the comics, which is sort of the oldest version of Kang that has, like, matured a bit and become a little bit more benevolent. And it's not that it's a different variant where things went differently and so he's nicer and better. It's that he was the Conqueror. He went through all that and he's now come out the other side. And so whenever Immortus fights Kang in the comics, it is literally the same person, just at different stages of his own timeline, if that makes sense.
All right, so much more of this after a quick word from these sponsors. In the comics, how does Kang actually time travel? Is it a device, or has he been so enlightened with knowledge that he just knows how to, like, teleport to a different time?
So in the comics, he actually finds, in the earliest iteration of Kang, the Fantastic Four encounter him as Ramatut, which is a version that we see in the mid-credit scene.
Okay.
And this is one of the fun things about this character is there are certain comments that were thrown out by Stan Lee in these early, early issues. And, you know, Stan Lee was a lot of things, and he did a lot of things really well, but I don't think anybody would say he is a world builder per se. You know, like, he is a world builder in that he created a ton of stuff that's still around, but he's more of a raw material guy.
I get it. He's tossing out ideas, but he hasn't, like, figured them all out, like, like, all the points connected. Okay, yeah.
And part of that was that, you know, the way he was working was just, like, I've got to get an issue out this week, and we're just going to, like, you know. And so then you have people later that have the benefit of having read all these things and can start making connections. And that's what's really fun about the Lanz and Kelly comic, is they were essentially doing that. But in those early issues, Lee plants these seeds that people have played with and kind of kept ambiguous. And one of them is the Fantastic Four. By the time they meet Kang, Dr. Doom has already time traveled at one point, and he has this time traveling platform that he's come up with. And so whenever they meet Rama Tut, they just automatically, because what Stan Lee did always want to do is just connect things in some way. So they say, I wonder if he's even a distant descendant of Dr. Doom, and use the same time traveling tech. And so then that's an idea that's been played with over and over again.
That was one of my questions.
The Lanz and Kelly run miniseries opens essentially with a future version of Kang. With Kang before he becomes Kang, finding Dr. Doom's, like, he's obsessed with Dr. Doom as this, like, historical person that existed like 1,000 years before him, in the same way that we would be obsessed with, like, King Arthur or something, you know, someone that existed like 1,000 years ago. Although King Arthur may or may not have existed, but
okay. In the MCU, can you see Dr. Doom playing into this at all? Or would Dr. Doom, if he showed up, would be a totally separate story? Or are they going to tie Dr. Doom in somehow?
I think he's going to be tied in, because I think it would
be as a variant of Kang, or like a young relative, like before Kang, that he's like Kang's great, 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 great grandfather.
I think.
Cause we're not going to jump ahead like 1500 years in the MCU. I don't think, right?
No. I mean, we may, in Kang Dynasty,
yeah,
depending
maybe
on how Kang-centric that is, I could see us getting Kang's kind of origin actually on screen. But I think, one, you know, I can't remember what we've said on the Friends from Work Plus side and what we've said here, but the big thing that's important for people to know in terms of, like, Kang's lineage, is that it has been absolutely confirmed that, I mean, his name is Nathaniel Richards, is the actual name of Kang, He Who Remains, all the versions of these people that we see. It's a guy named Nathaniel Richards who is a distant descendant of Reed Richards.
Okay, pause. That was another question I had. Kang is a distant descendant of Reed Richards, and his real name is Nathaniel Richards, and he just somewhere along the line changes it to Kang, and then sometimes it's Kang the Conqueror. He's been nicknamed because he changed it to Kang. And then there's even more theory that eventually he gives birth to a Dr. Doom as well, like a distant relative. You're saying that theoretically Reed Richards, Kang, and Dr. Doom could all be related?
Potentially, but I think the way that would have to work is at some point, Kang, like the some Richards, you know, between Reed and Nathaniel, what, you know, somehow married into the Von Doom family, and so there's some trace of Doom in Kang's DNA. If that is, they've always kept that as sort of ambiguous, but I think. Yeah, I mean, because to answer the question about how Doom will be introduced, I think the reason I think it has to happen somehow is just because we're getting a Fantastic Four movie before the end of the multiverse saga.
And that matters, and because Doom is a big villain for the Fantastic Four.
Yes. Okay. And, I mean, he's the Fantastic Four villain, and he's the, like,
Is he ever an Avengers villain, or is it just a Fantastic Four thing?
I mean, you could argue that Dr. Doom is, or at least was, for the longest time, like the villain, like the Marvel villain. I mean, he's the first Marvel villain, really, because, you know, Fantastic Four was Marvel's first comic, and Doom was the first villain that really stuck. Okay. And so he's kind of like the Darth Vader of the Marvel universe. And he's the important thing is that he's the yin to the Richards, the Reed Richards yang. Like, they're supposed to be almost exactly equally matched in intellect and ability. And so you see, like, even the part, like, what makes that so interesting is Reed kind of has his own dark side, and you see that explored. And then Doom also kind of has his own light side. And so you see that he's not okay. a fully, you know, and so I think that the fact that we're getting, if we weren't getting a Fantastic Four movie before the Secret Wars movie, then I would say we're probably not getting Kang. But because we're getting that, and because we're getting a Secret Wars movie, and because Dr. Doom was pivotal not just to the 2015 Secret Wars comic that I think that they're really modeling this movie after, or at least this saga, but also the 1980s Secret Wars comic, both are kind of known for being really big, really great Dr. Doom stories.
Okay, so if you're ranking who's most pivotal to Secret Wars, not Kang Dynasty, Secret Wars, is it Doom, Kang, Fantastic Four in that order? And does Doctor Strange become aware of this ever? Rank who's most pivotal to the Secret Wars story. Like, what screams Secret Wars to you besides the word incursions? If you saw Dr. Doom, then you're like, oh, now we're like really close to Secret Wars.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I would say, I mean, so they're different stories. The 1980s one is a totally different thing that we'll have to talk about at some point, 'cause it's funny,
That's not the one you think they're doing.
I think they'll probably do some homages to it. This is like it will take 20 seconds. The 80s comic is essentially this cosmic being plucks all of the, or most of the heroes and villains out of Earth, brings them to some distant, random, largely uninhabited planet, and has them fight to see who will win. And the idea is it's sort of like a kid playing with action figures, and it was that, and that Marvel was trying to sell a new line of action figures based on all of this. So that was the original Secret Wars. The 2015
which
Hickman
makes more
Secret Wars.
Sense with the name, actually, because it is kind of a secret war, actually. But yes.
Yeah, yeah, and also a fun piece of trivia. Marvel named the comic Secret Wars because this is how like cynical this entire event was. They did a focus group with kids that were the, you know, 8 to 10 range or whatever, the kids they wanted to buy these action figures, and asked them, you know, which of a bunch of words they thought were most interesting. And the ones that they picked out were wars, plural, and secret. And then together, they came up with Secret Wars as this thing that would pull in a ton of kids. And it totally worked. There's a whole generation of Marvel fans who were introduced to Marvel because of these action figures they saw on the shelves. And then they wanted to read the comics. And so, so then Hickman only named his event that because I think he's wanting to, there are actual similarities, but it's in no way a sequel to the original event. Okay. But anyway, that's longer than I wanted to go. But yeah, with the 2015 Secret Wars, Dr. Doom is far and away.
What about Fantastic Four? They're involved or not?
They are involved. I would say Reed Richards, especially. Okay. What you see in what's interesting about Secret Wars is the whole lead up, it's painted more as an Avengers thing. And then when it comes down to it, Secret Wars doesn't actually really involve any Avengers. It involves some, but not in the way that like other books do, where you have this big showdown with Cap okay. and Tony and Thor and a bad guy. It winds up being really a Reed Richards versus Doctor Doom story. Okay. And so now the other, yeah, I mean, the other side of that, I would say in terms of the lead up, the major characters and the major players are, it gets dicey because I would say after Doom and Reed Richards, it's Tony Stark, who we don't have, at least in the 616. It's T'Challa, who we don't have. And then, you know, like after that, there's another kind of big gap. And then you have like Namor's really heavily involved. Thanos is actually pretty heavily involved at one point. So a lot of characters
maybe
in that
they'll
comic.
Use Bruce, like in Tony's stead kind of thing.
I think that they could use Bruce actually, because that is something that, that's something that they play with in that comic. And I actually think that he's the characters in a spot where they could do that here.
Well, in the MCU, they're also kind of setting that up where he's becoming just kind of like the wise, like from a far, you know what I mean? Like
right.
leader, not leader, but the brain.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I think what, and you know, kind of my final point on this that I find interesting, and we'll have to kind of explore this more here and in the Patreon world, but Kang Dynasty, if you're looking at the Kang Dynasty comic and then you're looking at the Secret Wars comic, they are both, it's a totally different situation than we have with like Infinity War and Endgame. Because what Infinity War and Endgame was, Infinity War was sort of a merging of the original Jim Starlin Infinity Gauntlet story with the Jonathan Hickman Infinity story. And so you're starting to see how Hickman likes to kind of like do homages to past stories, but change them. But then Endgame was a totally, totally different thing. And we've talked about that on the podcast. I don't really think that there's any comics source for Endgame. That was just straight MCU. Here, we have two pretty big comic stories that are closing out this saga. So it feels less like a part one and part two like Endgame was. And it feels a little bit more like Kang Dynasty was sort of the culmination of the Kurt Busiek Avengers run. And Secret Wars was the culmination of the Jonathan Hickman Avengers run. And those were separated by almost 20 years. So I think it's kind of fun because I have no idea how they're going to merge those, because Kang plays a very small part in the Hickman stuff, but not, I mean, it's he would be very, very far down the list. I think you could pluck Kang out of that and not really affect Secret Wars at
wow.
all.
That's
and
fascinating
then the same,
in and of itself.
Yeah, it's a...
So they'll have to merge stories.
And what I think, I was actually, so I've been doing some reading up because I have not read all the Kurt Busiek Avengers stuff. I've read some of the more famous ones, but famous issues and arcs. But I've been going back and rereading it. And what I'm finding that I find fascinating, for so long the MCU was leaning on the Bendis and Hickman era, because I think that both of those writers tend to write in a way that, like, they almost write TV scripts. And so I think it's really easy to adapt onto screen. And now I think that they've really done that stuff, really, not all of it, but they adapted a lot of that. I'm realizing so many of the Phase 4 characters that we've been introduced to and you know, what we're kind of starting to get with Phase 5 goes back to that Kurt Busiek run. Like, you have all of these, like, and what's also interesting about it is I think Bendis, especially, his whole goal was to make all of this more accessible, which I think is what the Infinity Saga did, right? Like, it made things more grounded. Like, if you look at the first Iron Man, which Bendis kind of consulted on, and especially like the whole, you know, all of Phase 1 was, even though you had like Thor and Asgard and you had like the stuff in Captain America, they were trying to at least make it something that you could approach and understand without being a comic book nerd. I think you could argue that phase four has not been as interested in accessibility and has been more interested in just like going for whatever they want to go for. And looking back at these comics, that's how these comics were. Like, these are kind of the height of like you open the first run or the first issue of the Kurt Busiek Avengers, and it like immediately rattles off like literally 20 different random characters that you're automatically kind of supposed to have some understanding of. So it's like it seems like Marvel's going back to that, not just in terms of stories, but also it seems like there's maybe a willingness, for better or for worse, to lean into the comic bookiness, like Byzantine, like nerdiness of it all in a way that I don't think the Infinity Saga was.
A few more questions. With the Council of Kangs, I mean, is that supposed to be like a friendly group? That does that group eventually go awry? And even in the comics, is there obviously like a version of Kang that is more powerful than the others? Like, does a couple of Kangs, do they emerge as like leaders of that council? Does that make sense? Like, when we saw those three talking, the Amon, Tut, whatever, the Pharaoh one, and then we saw two others talking. Are those like three obviously distinct versions of Kang that have like separated themselves, or that just we happen to catch three of them? And then my last question on that front is, did we just see the most quote unquote conqueror version of Kang in Quantumania? And is he gone then? Or is there another variant in that council that's going to look just like him with the blue mask and the crazy lasers and stuff, but even stronger kind of thing? That's a lot of questions.
Yeah. Yeah. So that's where it gets really interesting. The Council of Kangs, you know, I did the whole thing about Kang not being a multiverse character, and where that's not true is with the Council of Kangs, because that is where you had all these versions of Kang that are led by, in the comics, the Kang, the 616 Kang. But the person pulling the strings, I think, really unbeknownst to all of the Kangs, is Immortus, who is 616 Kang down the line.
Wait, yeah, okay.
And the idea is, I guess to simplify it, he is tricking them into all of the multiversal, every other variant of Kang, where Kang's timeline diverges, and you see how this comes back to kind of what we were presented in Loki with He Who Remains. Those are all eliminated so that Kang becomes Immortus. So it's Immortus sort of tricking all these Kangs to basically, they think that they're being led in this kind of grand crusade, but really they're being led to their deaths, so that only the one Kang survives that then becomes Immortus. That's a really that's an oversimplification of it. To answer your question, yes, things do go awry. How that will translate into the MCU, I'm not sure. But that's one of the things where, like, I'm going to go back, because it's been a while since I've read that, and I want to go back and reread it with the full context. And so that's where, like, over the coming months and years, as we get closer to Kang Dynasty, I'm going to kind of be digging into a lot of these old comics and figuring out where we could be going.
But do you think like a version of Kang is going to emerge in an upcoming film where you're like, oh gosh, that's the actual conqueror? Does that make sense? Or like, was this version of Kang in Quantumania banished because he was that and maybe he's not dead?
I'm leaning towards that.
That he's not dead. He just got sucked back into that same like technology that took him elsewhere. Yeah. And he's going to now emerge with like his full blown tech and not in the constraints of the quantum realm. Because I also ask, I ask that because, like, does this ultimately end? Like, in 3 years, are we having a conversation? Hopefully we are. But are we having a conversation about, like, all of the Avengers or all of, like, the Nexus beings had to team up and physically stop one guy, just like they would in Thanos? You know, like, how they all had to, like, make a team and physically stop him. Uh-huh. Or is that not how this goes? Like, is this going to be more of, like, a, like, some versions of Kang are helping? Or, like, what happens if they don't stop this Kang? Do the multiverses actually collide? Or is it Kang that's actually causing... You know what I'm saying? Like, is it going to be as, like, cut and dry, you think?
I think...
That was a weird question, but do you see what I'm hinting at?
No, I do. I do. So... yeah, here's what's fun about the Hickman run is, in, like I said, the Infinity War film in so many ways was drawing from Hickman's Infinity comic, and that is essentially like a halfway point on the way to Hickman's Secret Wars. And what I love about that is Infinity has the kind of showdown that we had in Infinity War and Endgame, where it's like you see the Avengers taking on Thanos and it feels like the, you know, the stakes are high in this kind of like Lord of the Rings, everything's on the line battle. And then Secret Wars is where things are actually heading, and it's very, you're right, it's very different in that it's not, are we strong enough to beat this really strong guy? It's, we are now, we're faced with a situation that's not even about strength. It's bigger. Like, we're just dealing with the death of timelines and fallout of that.
Why though? Why are they crashing? Like, why are those incursions happening though?
In the comics, it's because of these like, again, this is Hickman and it's super high sci-fi, but it's these like cosmic, like ancient outside of time kind of beings.
Like, do Celestials play into this from Eternals?
Like, even I think these are supposed to be, yes, it's sort of, it's, they're called Beyonders. It's which is Hickman's callback to the Beyonder, who is the being that removes all the heroes and villains from Earth in the 80s and puts them on the secret planet.
Okay, let me pause for a second. Ignore what Hickman did. What does your gut tell you is going to happen in the film universe? Have you gotten enough hints now?
Well, so, yeah, I mean, I love this because Multiverse of Madness and Quantumania both use the word incursions, but they...
Remind me why the one happened in Multiverse of Madness. They take him to that one.
That's what I was
one.
Just thinking about.
Yeah, yeah. Remind me. Or maybe the listeners will have to remind me. Why did that one happen again? Because they give an explanation. It's something with Strange, right?
I think it's something to do with someone spending too much time in another universe.
It feels like it's going all the way back to that line from Tony Stark in Endgame, you know, where he says, well, when you mess with time, it tends to mess back. You'll see. And I'm not saying they were already, I'm not saying they were that far, you know, ahead of the game.
Right.
But that's what this all kind of feels like, right? Because if I remember right, wasn't it something like Strange was like trying to be with Christine and he like tried so many things with time that it got jacked up? Wasn't it something like that?
Well, then, yeah, because I think, I haven't seen it since our movie party, which was coming up on a year ago, I guess, with folks in Austin. But I think, wasn't the whole reason that, the whole conversation that Strange has with the Illuminati, they're like, you know, Wanda doing this, like dreamwalking the way she is dangerous because it can cause an incursion. And you being here is dangerous because it can cause an incursion. Because I think, yeah, like the Strange, the strange that they knew, I got the sense that part of the way that I think they, and this is maybe conjecture, I think part of the way they beat Thanos was by him traveling to a to another universe and getting some sort of like added power or something. And I think that in doing so, he also caused like the death of that universe. And therefore they, I think that's why you see at the end of, you know, the end of his life is them beating Thanos, but then them like executing him, because it's like you won, but at what cost, you know, like you. And so I think the idea was anytime you kind of meddle, like when you touch. And so that line at the end of Kang Dynasty in the credit scene, when it's like they're touching the multiverse, I think it's, this is okay.
Well,
and
that's also kind of He Who Remains Loki, right? Isn't that what he's talking about? Like they have those meters in the TVA, because if too many branches get too far, they eventually can collide, right?
Yeah, yeah.
So like, if it touches the other or like you make contact, that's a problem inherently. That right. Like there's some binding principle of time in the universe, right? That like you cannot have the two versions interacting. Is that correct with all of that?
I think that's correct. And I'm just having this realization. I'm thinking more and more that the thing that Kang is referring to as being the end,
there's also a tiny, tiny, tiny reference to this on another level too in Endgame with the Ancient One. She talks about like the powers that come through, but remember she talks about like remove the stone from this universe and it does like the whole black, flow of whatever. And she talks about how like there's powers that come in and they can't protect them against that either. Now she might be, again, I'm not taking everything as gospel. She might have been referring to like, but I'm saying that there's like multiple hints of this. Like if you mess with it.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I think that's a good point. I mean, I like those lines being there. And I mean, I do think that you could argue that again, that's why I'm so curious to see how they handle some of this like time-wise. But I wonder,
I just kind of also love the idea that the Avengers, to do what they did, actually messed it up a little bit. That's a fun idea to me, because that's now going to make the impact of Endgame even last longer. If like it turns out that because they did that and they did pull it off in their timeline, but that gave Loki the chance to go to a different portal. Then he got abducted by the TVA, and then look what that could lead to, and like whatever that like.
But
the impact. I know it's outside time. Is that what you're gonna say?
Well, no. But But what's interesting to me is in the finale, He Who Remains says that he allowed all of that to happen.
Right, because even the TVA says, that's what Ravonna, I think, says. The Avengers are supposed to do that.
And He Who Remains wants Loki and Sylvie to take over, remember? So he's like, you're here because I let you be here. Like, all of this is what...
And Loki's the one that's like, the Avengers are literally hopping around in time and you're arresting me for...
Right.
Or something. It's something like that.
And, yeah, I mean, so I don't know if... like. I mean, because they could have, they could have pruned Loki at any point if He Who Remains was aware of him being there. So it's like I think he wanted him to be pruned at the right moment to then get through and get to him. And so then it like, did he orchestrate? There are also a lot of like interesting questions about, again, going back to the first episode of Loki with like the free will predestination thing, where like is, you know, like with the Infinity Saga, I've seen some people say that Loki and what we're getting now almost cheapens it, because it's like, well, this only happened because it was ordained by He Who Remains as the correct timeline.
People have been having this discussion for literally thousands of years in real time.
Right. Yeah, I mean, so I think it's going to be, it's as much as like, I know Marks and McFeely felt like they had a real lift when it came to presenting time travel in the MCU, because it's been dealt with in so many different ways and so many different properties. And I feel like that was nothing compared to the lift of some of the writers coming up and trying to figure out how to make all this consistent. Because what all of this to say, and this is my kind of my last piece, is whereas He Who Remains makes it seem like the multiversal war is because of Kang's, and whereas Kang says something when he's talking to Janet that sounds similar, I do wonder, like, the line that, like, whenever Kang says, like, something's coming and I know how it ends and you don't want to be there, like, that combined with the mid-credit scene where it's, where they're saying they're touching the multiverse now and something like they'll, you know, they'll destroy everything and we have to stop them, that makes it seem like, to go all the way back to what you were saying at the beginning, if the Kangs do cause the massive kind of catastrophe, it almost seems like it's in an attempt to stop something else that they think is worse. You know what I mean? Because there's this air of mystery there where it seems like they're trying to paint a picture of a bigger threat.
Okay, very last question. We're gonna end on this. Do you think that there are keywords that we should be looking out for when it comes to certain characters in their multiversalness that could be hints of their importance in the future? Like, I don't think that WandaVision necessarily had this, you know, all figured out, but the fact that they did a whole commercial for the Nexus pill,
right?
And you've talked about how, like, Wanda is a Nexus being in the comics. And then you talked about how, like, Ted, actually from Werewolf by Night,
yeah,
is like a Nexus being. Do you think that those are all hints that we should be looking for? And then, like, in 5 years, they're like, oh, see how that all tied together? Or is it just like they're just paying homage to the comics, pay no mind, no big deal, just a fun Easter egg? Do you see what I'm saying?
Yeah, yeah. I do think there are things to be, like, I think that Nexus is something to look out for. And I have to believe that they wouldn't start using that word in the multiverse saga if they didn't want to do something with it. I mean, Wanda, you could argue they've already done something there, but I'd be curious to see if there's more. Ted, I'm you know, I feel like we're gonna get more with Man-Thing, but I don't know what that would look like. But I do think there are a couple things, like, you know, I would have said Illuminati was one, and we've gotten a version of that already. I don't think that that's going to be the end of that. And, you know, we'll see what that looks like.
Reed Richards, Dr. Doom, if we see those.
I think Molecule Man is a person that...
never heard of this?
What's that?
I've never heard of this.
Yeah, another Fantastic Four villain that winds up playing a really big role in Secret Wars and the lead up.
Okay. I'll definitely remember that when I hear Molecule Man.
Beyonders, okay, would be one. You know, maybe if we get into, they really go the Hickman route. There are a lot of, like, the Builders is one that you may hear about, although I don't know how much they'll, but a lot of these kind of, like, these beings that are kind of above and beyond human understanding that are, I don't want to give any more away because,
that's fair.
I think that it's such a fun read to kind of let it unravel, and we're doing that on the Friends from Work Plus side.
Okay.
But I think as we get closer and once we finish that read through, we can talk freely about just all of the plot events of that and kind of see how they start mapping on. But I think those are some, if they're going to do something similar, you'll undoubtedly hear about the Beyonder or Beyonders, and you would have to hear about Molecule Man. But I think that they could, what I think they could be doing is replacing that because it's so kind of trippy and hard to wrap your mind around with Kang. And because otherwise I'm thinking, like, if they were to try to, I mean, we're already getting to the point now where it, even though we're early in phase five, if they start trying to cram all of this in, it's going to feel like a huge left turn. So I think that they're going to wind up letting Kang
be the main driver of all this stuff or replace the roles of other characters or stories.
Yeah. Yeah. Which I think makes sense. And again, given how well received Jonathan Majors has been in this role, I think giving him that much purchase in the MCU makes sense. But I think the big question for me still is whether Kang actually makes it to Secret Wars or whether we see the Kang ends with the Kang Dynasty film. And that's what I love, because in the Infinity Saga, Thanos was the main villain. And if Thanos had actually been beaten at the end of Infinity War,
you'd be like, what are we making another movie for?
Right, right. Like, I think we all had a sense, because originally it was called Infinity War Part 1 and 2, and then they changed it. Like, we all knew, as shocking as the ending was, that there was going to be, like, another chapter in some form. And what I kind of love about this is I truly have no idea what the Secret Wars movie is going to look like. And I think that that's really fun.
One of the things I would have loved to been a fly on the wall, actually, and going forward, I just would love to be a fly on the wall in certain Marvel Studios meetings. I find it so fascinating, the behind the scenes and like when these decisions were made, because I don't think like during the Endgame era, like when they're making that in 2018 and working on it, I'm guessing most of the meetings were about making sure they land, you know, the biggest movie of all time, that plane.
Right.
Land this fish, land this bird. But I've just, you know, ever since that, you know, Thanos, fine, I'll do it myself in Age of Ultron thing, I wonder if now they know the world's a different place and they do have to project far enough out. And I know Kevin Feige has said they do work like years out.
Yeah.
But I just wonder, like, when that movie is like a month from airing, if they were starting to have these conversations of like, put these lines in about time, because the next saga is going to be all about multiverse, time travel, the whole deal. And then if that's the case, I'd love to hear the conversation of like how hammered out were those details that long ago. And if that's the case, are they right now hammering out like their next saga? Like, are they already going like, whatever happens at the end of Secret Wars, remember we have like the X-Men saga starting after that.
I think so, because Feige made a comment in that last big interview he did where he said, you know, for the longest time, we've been trying to figure out what introducing mutants into the MCU looks like, and we finally figured it out. And so we know now what that's going to be, you know, and obviously he's like, we're not going to tell you, but, and it made it sound like after Secret Wars is over, now, it could happen before then, but I think just given what we know, it would make more sense to do it after. They're already thinking about that. In 2019, before we even started this podcast, they did that big San Diego Comic-Con announcement of like so much of phase 4 and 5. Like we found out, like we got the titles of Doctor Strange and the Multiverse of Madness in like July or August 2019. And I think we got Quantumania then as well, like just announcements. And so you wonder how much, I mean, that was 3 months after Endgame came out. And then we had the COVID break and you know what, but I'm curious, like, was Multiverse of Madness always supposed to feature incursions? Like, was Quantumania always supposed to feature Kang? Like, you know, like, I just wonder if I wonder if someone's like, this is the title of this movie, now write that movie. Or if they're like, what should Doctor Strange's next story be? And they kind of like paint it in broad strokes and say, okay, we're going to call it Multiverse of Madness. And then we'll bring in a writer to actually figure out the nuts and bolts of that. Because then you hear stories about Waldron essentially rewriting it when Raimi came on. you know, Loveness. What I thought was interesting is when we had Lansing and Kelly on, they talk about being friends with Jeff Loveness. Their comic for Kang was published in summer of 2021. And knowing how in depth the art in that book is really meticulous, and I have to imagine took the artist there, Carlos Magna, a lot of time. So I have to think that they were writing that in at least 2020, you know, and they said that before they even started writing their Kang comic, Loveness had already been working on the Quantumania script for a while. So it's like, I think they're planning pretty far ahead with this stuff. Like, I know he's writing the Kang Dynasty script right now, per an interview I read with him earlier. And so you have to imagine, like, in a year or two, I wonder, is someone already writing the first post-Secret Wars thing? I don't know.
Yes is the answer, but yeah, to what degree all that is fascinating.
Right.
All right, well, thank you for all your work here. Doing the Lord's work. Appreciate it.
This was fun.
Yeah.
I feel like there's so many things we could still... We keep splitting these up into like part one and two, and we're going to have like part seven.
While you were talking, I jotted down a note. Friends from Work plus idea. Where will we see them next? And I think we should do an episode on Friends from Work plus where we now go, like, when is Shang-Chi going to pop up? Yeah. And is he tied to this? Like, will we see She-Hulk next? Yeah, I mean, like, that'd be kind of fun to go through and like make projections of how they could fit into any of these things.
No, I love that.
So, like I said, still lots more coming. Next Thursday, you're going to hear clips from Jackson and Colin, like we've been talking about, and you're going to hear clips from Christoph Beck. And then both of those interviews are available in full on YouTube, so you can go check those out as well. But not only that, officially, finally, kind of ranking these for people, or ranking Quantumania and announcing if that's changed your other rankings at all or not. And then we only have a few weeks of filling some other things that we're really excited about before we start ramping up for Guardians of the Galaxy 3 and then figuring out if this ties into any of this. So
yeah,
it's going to be really fun. I need to say, our Quantumania initial reactions episode is now our most listened to episode ever on Spotify. So I do want to say thank you so much to Spotify. And you know what, by the way? That deserves one of these. It's now, let me 3, 2, 1, let's redo it again. Our Quantumania initial reactions episode is now our most listened to episode ever on Spotify. That's what I should have been doing this whole time. Which I just kind of end the episode by saying, one, I'm thankful for Spotify for featuring it in some cool spots. Two, I think it's actually, in hindsight, kind of a fun episode for people who are just finding this podcast, because if nothing else, you take away that we're positive about things, that's a win in my book. And then I'm thankful to all the people who actually listened. And if you're new, like, for example, I think we gained like 20 or 25 people over on Slack. So that's kind of fun. Welcome to the community. And we're just getting started, baby. We're just getting started. So thank you to all of you. And then we'll see you next week. And check out Friends from Work Plus if you're wanting even more content. Otherwise, thanks for listening. We'll see you next time here on Friends from Work.
Live on DAZN Worldwide, May 2nd and 3rd, Garcia versus Romero and Canelo versus Skull. Friday from 6 p.m. Eastern, Garcia returns in a history-making Times Square takeover. 24 hours later, Saturday from 7 p.m. Eastern, King Canelo faces undefeated Skull for the undisputed crown. May 2nd and 3rd, a knockout weekend of boxing. Pick one or go all in for only $90, exclusively on DAZN. Buy now at DAZN.com/boxing.
Time is precious, and so are our pets. So time with our pets is extra precious. That's why we started Dutch. Dutch provides 24/7 access to licensed vets with unlimited virtual visits and follow-ups for up to 5 pets. You can message a vet at any time and schedule a video visit the same day. Our vets can even prescribe medication for many ailments, and shipping is always free. With Dutch, you'll get more time with your pets and year-round peace of mind when it comes to their vet care.